Welcome to the 35th episode of the Board Game OK podcast, a podcast about board games and the hobby of board gaming, recorded in beautiful Helsinki, Finland. I'm your host, Luis, and with me is my co-host, Jonas.
Kesä terveiset.
In this episode, we'll discuss board game conventions, what they are, which are the biggest ones, and how to prepare for going to a convention. We will also review two games, Dark Pact and Glenmore 2 Chronicles.
Yeah, Dark Pact, not Dark Ages.
Yeah, I had it on my notes, Dark Ages, but then I played the game and it's Dark Pact. So without further ado, why don't you start us with the review of Dark Pact, Jonas?
Sure, gladly. Dark Pact is a new deck builder that I am extremely excited about. Well, why this deck builder is exciting out of all the different deck builders that are out in the world? Well, this one is new, so that's something that's going for it. And it's by Tom Lehman. Luis, do you know who Tom Lehman is?
Tom Lehman is the designer of Res Arcana, right?
That's true.
And Race for the Galaxy?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Race for the Galaxy. One of my absolute favorite games. And Race for the Galaxy and Res Arcana have definitely put Tom Lehman on this pedestal of any card game coming out from this guy is by default going to be something people will pay attention to. So me and Chilla, we have been on a deck building bender this year. We have been playing tons of Star Realms, which is a very simple deck builder. And before that, we also always like to play Quest for Eldorado, which is a deck builder by Rainer Knizia. Mm-hmm. After trying out Star Realms, then we tried Shards of Infinity. And then we tried Dominion, the classic, the grandfather of all deck builders. And now Dark Pact arrived to Europe and I got a chance to buy it and then play it with Chilla a ton. And we also just played Dark Pact, Luis. What did you think about it?
Well, with my limited experience of it, I'm excited about it. I think this is one of those card games that makes you excited about seeing more, about seeing different strategies, about wanting to try different things. It's definitely one of those games, I think, that you're not going to do that well the first times unless you're a little bit lucky or choosing a simple strategy. But it has good mechanics. Maybe it has a little bit of an overwhelming factor because there's a lot of cards, a lot
absolutely.
Of decks. But yeah, I liked it. I actually liked it.
Yeah, hey, let's focus on that overwhelming factor. Just to also give a quick overview of the rules, which are super similar to Dominion or any other deck builder, right? You have your hand of cards. In this game, it's a hand of five. Then you get to play one action card and one action card only. But of course, you have some action cards that give you more actions, and then you can add even more actions. After you have played your actions, which can include things like trashing cards from your deck, typical deck building stuff, or drawing more cards, again, typical deck building stuff, then you play out your treasure cards, which are basically coins, which let you buy stuff from the supply. This is Dominion, isn't it? The big difference to Dominion is that the game always ends in a different way. The one game-ending condition that is always the same is the supply deck running out, in which case players count their cards and see who has more plus points. But unlike in Dominion, where you just keep collecting victory point cards in every game, and every game ends with the same counting of cards, who has the most points. Maybe the expansions changed that. I don't know. I've only played the base game of Dominion. In Dark Pact, there are these Dark Pact cards that every now and then appear in the market, which you can buy, and every Dark Pact is its own victory condition. A typical Dark Pact is, for example, have 13 coins in your hand, which is how you won. Me, I had a card, a Dark Pact that said, have 19 inside points in my hand. And then there are Dark Pacts that say, for example, have 22 cards in your hand when you play this card.
Mm-hmm. See, now that I'm reading the card with the Dark Packs, I thought that there would be also Dark Packs that related to demons, related to spirits. It seems that it doesn't happen. I didn't even read all of the Dark Packs because I'm like, okay, I cannot focus. I cannot try to do everything. I'm just going to focus on this little thing and this little thing only.
Yeah, but that I can tell you, that is the right mentality in Dark Pact. You really choose your path and then you pursue it relentlessly. There are these 13 Dark Pacts. There's a nice little reference card that summarizes all of them. In your first game, you are not going to be looking out at the different strategies. You see a Dark Pact, I'll pick that one, and then you'll start building your deck around it. So this was my 12th game of Dark Pact. And right now in this game, whenever I see the starting market, which by the way is a dynamic market, there's always 10 cards. You don't know which 10 cards are going to be there. Whenever I see the early market, that really tells me already, okay, which strategies might be very viable here. Mm-hmm. So internalizing the different dark packs that are in the deck, I think that will happen around game 5 or so.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about internalizing the different actions? You know, like there's this mm-hmm. spirit that is the generous spirit, and apparently there's at least 2 cards that I've seen from that one. Yeah. So what about that? Like you start getting familiar with the cards?
Yes, I start getting extremely familiar. There's still a couple of cards, for example, these react cards that are now in front of me and Louis. React cards you can play when there's someone is attacking you with a card effect. Then you can play a react card that defends it. Those ones I am not so familiar with, but every other card I'm like more or less familiar. And I was surprised that to happen because the first 2 times I played Dark Pact, I thought that this might be a little bit too much for me, maybe also for Chilla, but at least for me. Just a lot of similar sounding actions and similar sounding card names. We have Spirit Lord and Guiding Spirit and Generous Spirit. Mm-hmm. And this is something that is also mentioned in the Shut Up and Sit Down review of Dark Pact. The illustrations, I think they're nice illustrations, but they don't pop out that well. So in the beginning, every spirit is kind of like muddy. It's like this greenish hue, some floating spirit somewhere. So it's really hard to differentiate the different actions. But by now, I'm at this moment where I have completely stepped over that issue. Mm-hmm. That is no longer an issue for me that I'm not able to tell what are which cards.
Okay. Yeah, because that's definitely, I think, something that could put off a lot of people. Similarly to what we have talked about Race for the Galaxy, where like maybe you have to play several games before you really start to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I think this could be a bit the same. I think the difference is that maybe you don't need that in order to enjoy your first game. You know, I enjoyed it even though I had no clue what the other packs, the insights. But I know that had I wanted to be more competitive, maybe I would be stressing more about like, okay, am I missing something? You know, this fear of missing out. Should I read everything?
Yeah. Yeah. Although I can tell you, you know, now at this like 12 game count, I don't need to read all of the cards. I just look at the supply and I'm like, oh, okay, I know what I should probably do here.
Okay.
And yeah, another thing that you touch upon there, you know, playing with someone for the first time, that is not something that I will continue to do. I wanted to show you this game just so we can talk about it. I will not play this with other people besides Chilla, unless someone is also really experienced with Dark Pact, then we can have a duel. Even in this game, at some point I realized like, oh, I have to like take it a little bit easy. Because I was going for the strategy of like just destroying all of the supply cards here just to quicken the game end and then win with my inside points. And then at some point I realized, well, that's not going to be a very nice experience for you. Mm-hmm. And also then it might taint the review because you didn't get to see the full arc of what does it actually feel like to try to get to your Dark Pact. Mm-hmm. And I feel that if I would be showing this to new people, every time I would be having to take it easy instead of like really trying to break the deck and to break the game, you know?
Okay, yeah, well, I guess if Chilla likes it, then that's something you can do. Otherwise, you would have to explain it to somebody new, so try to get them to your level, or at least to enjoy it as much as you do. But yeah, that sounds like a good strategy for you for this game. So when did this game come out?
I think either 2026 or 2025. Let's double check. 2026.
Really, so it's a very new game.
Very new game. It was released in the States a couple months before Europe.
How did you get it?
So I used a thing called online shopping. I went to an online store and I placed my order for Dark Pact.
Okay, but here in Europe then?
Here in Europe, yes.
After,
I did not.
After listening to Shut Up and Sit Down review or?
No, after hearing that Tom Lehman is making a deck builder. Okay. Immediately when I heard about that, I knew that I will try this game. And I can tell you that I was not disappointed. Yes, in those first games, I wasn't sure what I'm going to think about this game. One thing that we have not discussed regarding the rules are these multiplier cards. Mm-hmm. There are cards that say 3x or 2x, and you get to combo those with action cards that you play, and those 2x, 3x cards, they multiply every single number that's on that card. So if you have a card that says plus 2 actions, plus 2 draws, and you add it with a 3 times and a 2 times card, now you're doing 12 draws and 12 more actions.
I completely forgot that rule that I could combine it with anything else than money.
Yeah, and because of when you do those multipliers, it gets out of hand, especially if you're going for those dark packs where you have to have 22 cards in your hand. There's a lot of counting of your cards. And until you get to that final turn, it really feels like you are in a swamp.
Yeah.
And there's like cards everywhere. And you're just trying to somehow get to that 22 card hand. But you have like way too many cards. You don't even know what should you be playing now that you cannot yet fulfill the Dark Pact. But all of that has been lifted from me as I have learned the secrets of Dark Pact.
Yeah, all of these Dark Packs that are Keepers are crazy. You just need infinite amount of cards.
Yeah, and Keepers are Dark Packs that you play them once and they're always there. Your opponent is seeing that whenever you get that state, you get there immediately. Then you have instant Dark Packs that have to be actions that you play from your hand. And then you must, on that round, fulfill the criteria. Hey, one more thing I want to say. Well, I think I start every sentence with one more thing.
Yeah.
There are so many things I want to talk about this game. But one critical thing that needs to be mentioned here is that not only am I not interested in playing this with other people than Chilla, except with some experienced Dark Pact players, I don't ever want to try out what this game feels like at 3 or 4 players. It feels insanity to wait for your turn as someone is doing, okay, I do this actions, now I get to play these 2 cards. Okay, I'll play this. What should I buy here? Okay, then I do 4 draws. Okay, then I multiply these. Okay, now I'm going to do 16 draws and I'm going to do 16 actions. And you're like, oh no. And the oh no is from the realization that there's 2 more players who kind of do exactly that before it gets to you.
Do you think that with experienced players, this could be better? Like if you are playing with 3 people, but all of you know, then it's just like, I play this, I draw cards. Because I've seen people play more professionally Race for the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Or I've seen videos at least of people playing it. And it's just like, yeah, you know the cards so well. They're like, I do this, I do that, I do this, I do that. Like faster turns with 25 cards than my 3 card turn right now.
Yep. I think Race for the Galaxy will always be faster.
Yeah.
It just physically takes a lot of time to play 19 cards one by one from your hand and executing all the actions. I don't think, like, you cannot escape that, no matter with what experience. So I think it's always going to be a bit slow.
All right. So there you go. A game that you will never get to play with Jonas.
Yeah. Should we go to ratings?
Yeah.
So this was kind of your first impressions. What is your first impression rating?
My first impression rating is a solid 2.
Star. Solid 2. Hey, what do deck builders in general get from you? How would you rate the 3 or 4 of deck builders?
3 or 4, actually.
Okay,
yeah, depending on the deck builder. For Quest for El Dorado, for example. Well, I don't want to spoil my review, my future
but,
review.
Yes, so. But we might be talking about higher than 2 stars for Quest for El Dorado.
For, yeah, 3 or 4. Definitely deck builders are really nice experiences if they're done well. I think the fact that this has a lot of overwhelmingness into like, okay, this card is almost the same as the other one, but does a little bit something different with that extra text that it has. And all of the extra strategies that the Dark Packs could provide depending on when do they come out in deck, when do they come out in the supply. I think that makes it a bit more difficult for me to recommend this to a lot of people. So that's why I'll give it a 2 stars.
Yeah. I am still so excited to keep playing this game. It is so fun to try out these different Dark Pacts to see how to get there, because it kind of requires you to figure out like how to break this game, how to make the machine work in order to get to that Dark Pact. It is also highly interactive with 2 players because you do plenty of this hate trashing and exiling from the supply. You keep sniping cards from each other. There are some attack cards as well. There are ways to rush the game end if you feel that you will win if it comes to the game end and we have to count the points from our decks. Yeah, and honestly, I think I like this much more than Dominion because it's a simple shuffle and deal kind of game. You start with those 10 cards, you put 10 cards in the middle, let's start playing. Yes, the turns take longer than in Dominion, but they are so exciting. And with every game, you always is wondering like, oh, I wonder what Dark Pact will I go for next? I'm hoping for expansions, but not even that much because I feel that there's still plenty to discover here. And I have had so much fun playing this with Chilla. This was my 12th game. And we have played those 11 games together with Chilla within like a very short time period. Unfortunately, the last time I asked Chilla if we should play a game of Dark Pact, she said, that game is a bit boring, isn't it? And inside my head, I was like, Chilla, no, I thought Dark Pact was our thing now. And I didn't want to ask her, or I didn't dare to ask her, why is this the case? Why is this game boring for you? Because I don't think I could have handled the truth. I didn't want to know more.
So what do you think?
4 out of 4 stars. Dark Pact.
So strong recommend for anyone.
Well, strong recommend. I think you now by now you probably know the disclaimers. You heard the disclaimers. Only for 2 players, and only for an opponent that you know you can get those reps in.
Okay.
Don't get this if you feel that you will be showing this to new people over and over again. Get this if you know that you will keep playing this with someone.
So
again
how
and again.
Does it feel that there's a likelihood that you don't get to play this with anybody else ever again? You said you would only play with the Chilla, and Chilla said, this is a bit boring, which might be an indication that she does not want to play this for a lot longer. So is that like, okay, you love it, 4 out of 4 stars, you recommend it, but you're never going to touch it?
No, I for sure we're going to get a couple plays in. And you know what? Maybe she will also change her mind. Maybe there is a lever that she has not pulled yet in the game. And once she pulls that lever, she sees the demonic energy coming out and the powers that come with it. And then she will get back to Dark Pact.
Yeah, you will maybe make a Dark Pact with the devil to get her to play again with you. What do you want most in your life, Jonas, for Chilla to play Dark Pact with me?
Yeah.
You could have asked for anything.
Okay, what do you think? Because you know how it is with the stories. You meet the devil and then you ask for something and the devil gives it to you. Yeah. But there is this catch.
Yeah.
What do you think the catch is going to be when I ask the devil that, hey, make Chilla keep playing this game with me?
I think the catch is that you will never like any game ever again. That's like, you just get to play Dark Pact forever.
Yeah, that could be the thing. Yeah.
That Chilla never likes any game ever again.
Yes.
And then you only can play with her, only Dark Pact.
Yep. And I will tell you that that would be a situation where I will absolutely regret my decision of making a Dark Pact with the devil. Yes. Okay, Dark Pact by Tom Leenan.
All right, next up, we have the review of Glenmore 2 Chronicles. This is a board game by Matthias Kramer, or Kramer, I think it's Kramer.
That's a good question, because we got, Michael?
Wolfgang Kramer.
Wolfgang, which I think is Kramer.
Yeah.
But then, you know, in German, words don't usually start with C. Usually start with K.
Yeah.
So I always wondered if it's an English Kramer.
Yeah, an English Kramer. Or I do not know. I actually, many times in the past, I've confused Matthias Kramer with Wolfgang Kramer. I thought it was the same Kramer. Or same Kramer. But no, this is a different Kramer. Do you know what else has this designer designed?
Oh, is it Wir sind das Volk? Is that a... No, that's actually not. But he did some war game recently. And I know he has done plenty. I just can't remember anything.
He has
anything.
Done several. I think the ones that maybe you have heard about are Kraftwagen.
Yes, I heard about.
Rococo.
Uh-huh.
And Watergate. I think those are the 3 that stand out to me, besides, of course, Glenmore 2.
Yep. And I have actually not played any of those games. So I wonder if Glenmore might be the only game that I have played from.
I have Kramer. Watergate. I played Watergate and now Glenmore 2. And Watergate is a very renowned game for 2. But anyway, we have talked about Isle of Skye recently in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The theme, or at least the basic mechanics of this game, are very similar, in which you are drafting tiles in order to put them into your own board or your own terrain that you're building with your chieftain, and you're trying to become the most successful clan in Scotland.
Yeah, we're back in Scotland, baby!
We're back in Scotland. However, the mechanics of this are a bit different. Here you have like this rondel where you are picking a tile and you're drafting against other people.
I think some people call it like time track, meaning like if you're the last on that rondel, you get to go next. But if you don't go past anyone, you get to go again several times.
Exactly. So yeah, you have that drafting mechanism. And besides the tiles, which are maybe more classic as Isle of Skye, where like you put stuff and then we'll give you some production benefits, some resources or some movement or some actions, you also have characters that allow you to move on this other board.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the 2 main type of tiles in this game. You have different letters of tiles, A, B, C, and D. And after each letter is gone, after you use all of the tiles, then you do a round of scoring. You score four main things. You score how many people you have, which are those tiles that allow you to put things on the other board, how many cards you have, which are kind of special locations, how many barrels of whiskey you have, and how many people you have on your initial tile.
Yes.
How many little Scotsmen you have on your initial tile. This is very interesting because the scoring happens multiple times in the game, and this is the main way you're going to get points in the game. And you're always comparing yourself with the person that has the least amount of that particular thing. So you only score if you have more than the person that has the least amount. So if we're scoring character tiles, then if you have one and I have one, then we score 0 points. Mm-hmm. But if you have zero and I have one, then I score 1 point. But if somebody else has five, then they would compare to the person that has the least, which is you, and then they will score a little bit more points. Yeah. So
I would assume plenty of looking around on what's happening with different players, who has what, who's in front of me.
Do you remember the game, Jonas, you're playing?
Yeah, so I have played Claymore 2, I think in 2023.
Okay.
One time. And because of that, I have a very vague recollection.
Yeah.
I tried to check the rules a little bit today just to kind of remember how the game generally works. And some good memories I have. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's a game full of interaction. I played it recently a couple of times back to back because with three players, it went relatively fast that you could just like play.
And what is relatively fast?
I think we played a game with rules in less than an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah, that's fast.
And then we played the second game maybe also like in an hour and a half because we added one of these extra chronicles. Oh, by the way, this is called Chronicles because you have like different modules that you can add. And we played with one of the modules, which is called the boat races or the dragon boat races, which adds a little bit of interaction where you're moving some boats. Normally in the game, you have these action points, which allow you to move your Scotsmans to the edges of the board. And you want to have them on the edges of the board because where your Scotsman is allows you to place new tiles. So that sometimes restricts. But many times, either at the beginning of the game or just because you don't want to move or at the end of the game, you have extra movement points that you don't use at all. Mm-hmm. So on the basic game, you have a special location in this character board that allows you to get extra victory points for that, which is a strategy that a lot of people go for. Mm-hmm. But in this particular module, if you have extra movement points that you don't want to use, then you can use it to move your boat. And moving the boat around the track allows you to get a lot of victory points for whoever wins the race, plus a lot of like extra resources. So
yeah,
to me, this was the very first time that I played with a chronicle. And it made me realize like, oh, this actually changes the dynamics of the game quite a lot, but in a nice and satisfying way. Okay. And it made me super excited to try like different chronicles to see how it plays.
Yeah. Can I say something about the chronicles? I feel that the chronicles make this game so intimidating for me. Mm-hmm. When I see the Claymore 2 box, it's such a big box. And then there's like, how many of those modules? 19?
I think there are 8 on the first box plus 4 because I have an expansion. I bought it secondhand
first
with expansion, so at least 12.
Yeah, and to me, it just feels so much. I'm like, oh, what is this? Is my next year going to be just me playing Claymore 2 Chronicles all the time?
Yeah.
I don't want to. And I know it's an irrational feeling to have this feeling of, oh, it's too much. This game is giving me too much. Because guess what, Jonas? You could always just play the same module. You don't have to try out the different modules. But since they are there, they keep staring at me and asking me, when are you going to play with me?
Yeah.
When it's my turn.
See, unlike Dark Pact, I think this is a game that is quite simple to assimilate. And once you know the rules, I think you just want to try those chronicles just to see how they change the game a bit. And how, like, in the first game that we played this last time, we were like, oh, I have these extra movement points that I couldn't use. And Manuel had already gone for the one that gives you a victory point for movement. And I'm like, oh, I wish I had gone for that one. And then, like, when the boats happen, like, yeah, I will have a strategy that I will now use all my extra movement points that I had in the first game to move my boat. But lo and behold, everybody was going for that same strategy. So there was every tile that had movement points got taken away from me. And they were like, I ended up losing the race significantly. But it felt like interesting. It felt like, okay, they are going for the movement strategy and I will not be able to win. Therefore, I will lose some points at the end of the game. But what if I try to then do something else that they're not doing? Now they have only tiles that provide movement points. What if I have the tiles then to provide me with extra resources and to try to do something else? I was not able to achieve it. I was second, I think, in both games. But still, it provided that juiciness of like, okay, there's a different strategy. I can try it. But oh, no, they have now won because of the specific time track thing. I can still try to then pivot and do something different. And it felt still viable and nice and exciting to try to do that. And
yeah.
Till the very end, I was like, hey, I might still win because they are going for the movement points. I've been collecting these characters, which gave me significant number of points throughout the different scoring opportunities and scoring rounds. So I get your point about the intimidating, but I think this is a game that I didn't remember how much fun it was.
Mm-hmm.
I had played, I think, in 2023 last time. I had played like maybe two or three times then. Now I took it back from the dusty shelf where I had it. We played it and I was like, yeah, I would like to play this more. I would like that if we don't have anything else to play, people would be like, yeah, let's just a quick warm-up of 1 hour of Glenmore 2.
Now, why did it take so long for you to get it replayed again?
Because the box is huge and then it's super hard to take to people. And it's like, it's always in my house. So it's just like, it's a hard box to commit to take to a meetup. But I think this is a perfect game, besides for the box, that you could easily pop out on the meetup and show to new players and people enjoy it, including yourself.
Yes, I played it at the meetup 2023 when I played it. And I agree fully. Perfect meetup game. Plenty of interaction, but at the same time, you get to, you know, have that efficiency puzzle going on a little bit. You know, it feels that it's one of these games that gives a little bit of something for everyone, but at the same time, does not end up feeling that it's everything for everyone and therefore it's nothing for no one. No, it still feels a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it feels that you can still have some strategies there. Okay, if I go here, then I take this away from somebody else. And you have that pressure, which I love with interactive games, where I want to go there, but if I go there instead of going to that second location, then maybe Manuel or Mercedes will take that location from me. So I'm like, there's a risk there. There's a little bit of a risk. There's a little bit of a tension. I'm like, where do I go? What's the best strategy? And that's always that like, oh, they took it from me and I knew they would, but I still chose to go here first.
Yep. And that's my exact memory from that time track. Because after that, I played also, or before that, I had also played Patchwork, which has that time track and it really works there as well greatly. And I remember after playing Glenmore 2, I thought that, wow, time tracks are the best.
Yeah.
Then I played Parks. That has a time track. And I thought that, this is not feeling so good.
Yeah.
Then I played, I think, New York Zoo with the Dark Pact. New York Zoo with the Dark Pact. No, New York Zoo with the time track. And there, again, I felt that, oh, why did I like time tracks? Time tracks are not good. But the problem was that in those games, it was not agonizing enough. But I remember in Glenmore 2, it is so agonizing. Mm. And then you make that call of like, you know what? They're not going to take it.
Yeah.
But they'll take it.
Yeah.
And you will feel so annoyed, so angry.
Yeah. And by the way, this is called Glenmore 2 because there was an original version of Glenmore. I have never played the original version, but I feel that this game is super well designed.
Yeah.
Like I think they have taken whatever they learned from the first version and they have added juiciness. They have added different mechanics to make it work. I think this game is not recognized enough as a great game. I think people don't play it enough. I think this game should be in more people's homes and libraries. And of course, part of it probably is the cost, the big box, the, I don't know what happened, but the big box definitely, I think, does it a disservice to be able to show it to more people.
Yeah. And I can like, my memory is so vague about this, but I feel that I didn't have any notes for Glenmore 2. And because of that, I it's easy to agree that, yeah, this game should have more appreciation.
Yeah.
And I feel that that often gets said in different places. People bring up Glenmore 2 and say, why aren't more people talking about Glenmore 2? It's such a great game. So because of this, I thought, well, why I don't play Glenmore 2 with Chilla? Because I checked that, hey, two-player Glenmore 2 it gets good recommendations on BGG as well. And that would be maybe the ideal situation for me. Because yeah, even though it's a nice meetup game, it might still be not exactly to my liking as a meetup game. I still might want to go with something more, even simpler, even more interactive or something. I don't know. So why not me and Chilla? Why don't we play Claymore? I came up with a framework for games for me and Chilla. It's called the three C's. If there's a game that me and Chilla end up playing, it has to have either combos, cards, or constructions. Construction.
What was the first word?
Combos.
Combos.
Yeah, those are the three C's. I don't think Claymore 2 has enough combos. Doesn't have enough cards. And by cards, I mean lots of cards. Mm-hmm. So that you get to have 10 cards in your hand and you play them. You're pew, 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 playing this card and playing that card. And construction, I had to kind of, what I wanted to say there was like building or managing or operating a thing like a farm, like in Agricola. Mm-hmm. But I had to find a C word for it. So construction. You know, you get to build your little thing. You do get to build your thing in Claymore 2, but not that much. It just feels that since you are fighting against others and it's just for those shared points that you're trying to get it, you don't feel like, oh, today, this time I will build a clan territory that is really good at whiskey making.
Mm-hmm.
No, you need to look at what other people are doing and what the scoring conditions are. You just can't choose your strategy from the get-go.
Well, you can a little bit because there are tiles that allow you to convert supplies or resources into victory points. As their action, there are tiles that allow you to get resources and other tiles that allow you to be converting those resources into victory points. So that can be a strategy as well. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I think this is a good game. Are you ready to give your review?
Yes, and it will be very short. My memory of Claymore 2 is that back in 2023, I had a good time playing it. I would gladly play it again at a meetup. However, I don't remember the game so well that I would be able to give it any kind of star rating. For sure, it's not one stars.
Mm-hmm.
Probably it's not going to be four star either for me. So if I would end up playing it more, I would probably arrive at something, either a two or three star rating. That's my review of Claymore 2. You might have something a little bit more insightful to say.
For me, it's a 3 out of 4 stars. I want to give it a 4. I think this is a game that maybe deserves a 4, but I think I need to play it a bit more, maybe with more Chronicles. Like, I just got super excited this time around because we played and it was easy to play back to back. And I'm like, hey, why aren't we taking this out more? But maybe with a few more plays, I would be like, that's the reason why. Maybe there is something there that I'm forgetting or not seeing. However, I think this is a super nice game that people should try. And that's why for now, I am reserving my 4 out of 4. I am being a bit skeptical.
Reserving. Oh, okay. Yeah. So not 4 out of 4 yet.
Not a 4 out of 4 yet. I had it at a 7 from last time we played it. And then I increased it to
7 as a BGG rating.
Rating. And then after we played it, I increased it to an 8.5. So now it's an 8.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, okay, this is a pretty good game. Anyway, so that is the review of Claymore 2 Chronicles. Now moving on to the topic of our episode, board game conventions. Jonas, I didn't send you any preparation for this episode, but tell us, what is a board game convention to you?
A board game convention to me is a timed event during which group of board game enthusiasts gather either indoors or outdoors in a specified location.
Yeah, that's a pretty accurate thing. So would you consider self-organized conventions like a convention? Like if we got together in a cottage and play board games, is that a convention?
Well, I guess it would require some kind of a public-facing surface where you ask a little bit more people, except just me, to join you.
But would one-day event be a convention?
Could one-day event be a convention? Sure, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, why not?
Why should people, Jonas, consider looking into board game conventions?
Because you are a board game nerd. You're listening to this podcast. You are into board games. And you want to maybe talk to people about board games. You want to play board games with people. But the non-board game people, they sometimes they don't want to hear your stuff about board games. They don't want to play a board game. They want to chat with you. They want to go to a bar. What else? They want to go mountain biking or something like that. But when you go to a board game convention, wow, everyone is into the same thing that you are into. And it's just an amazing feeling to meet random people. You can strike a conversation with anyone because you can just kind of like start talking about like, hey, what's your favorite game? Oh, I like that as well. You start talking about what games have you played in this convention. You can play until the whole thing closes and starting from when it starts, you know.
Do you think a convention has to have something else than board games? Like, does it require to have sellers, vendors, people showing some games, people selling games? Or is it just enough to have people playing?
For me, it's enough.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't think you even need to have people playing. You could have a board game convention that could have zero playing, just publishers showing games. And maybe not even demo. I wouldn't necessarily go to a convention like that. But hey, you know, call it a convention.
You would think like if it's just demoing, it would be a convention.
Yes. Yeah. Why not? What else would it be? A board game?
Board game exhibition?
Okay. Yeah. Exhibition. Probably. Yeah.
What do you like the most about the conventions that you have visited?
So I visited only two conventions, Robicon and Essen Spiel. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know if Essen Spiel now is an exhibition. To me, it's a convention. So what did you ask? What's the thing I like about these things?
Yeah, what do you like about going to conventions?
Yeah, because there's other nerds.
Yeah.
That's the thing I like about the most. And you just get to play so much. You get to talk about board games so much. You meet a lot of cool people. Yeah, that's really what I like most with these things. A
couple of things that you haven't mentioned, but I think some conventions have. Mm-hmm. Tournaments. People get to compete in tournaments. Mm-hmm. Activities, like side activities like LARPing or miniature painting for people that like miniature painting.
Yeah, and sometimes there's those talks, but I have never gone to listen to a talk.
No, but I thought like that's what you meant with exhibitions as well. So I consider that you mentioned. Yeah, but sometimes there are talks, definitely in Ropecon. And now in Essen, last year in Essen, there was a big stage where they have several talks, both in English and in German there. There is people from the industry that then you could learn, which maybe are part of the geeks that you were discussing.
No, I think those are much more grandiose geeks. It is so cool to be into a game and therefore kind of be into a designer.
Yeah.
And then meet that designer somewhere, or you meet the publisher of like your favorite game. It's just something so cool.
Yeah, definitely. And one last thing is that in conventions many times, I don't think in Ropecon in particular, but I think in a lot of conventions in the US and SN and perhaps UK Games Expo, you can get promotional stuff, promotional pieces that they just will be selling or will be displaying in these conventions that are not available anywhere else. I don't think this is happening that often anymore.
You're talking about promo cards?
Promo cards, promo content, things from the Dice Tower maybe you can only buy in conventions because where else would you buy them? I guess in their store, online store. Yeah. But
to me, not important. I used to think promos are something special because I never saw a promo. Then I saw my first promos and I was like, okay. So whenever the designer had some ideas that don't really work and are not balanced at all, well, hey, that's a promo card.
That is true. There's promos that are not great. All right, Jonas, how should people, if they are hearing you now and they start getting excited about conventions because they are nerds and they're like, yeah, I really want, how should they prepare if they want to go to a convention?
So you have to be prepared for masses of people, which might mean that you need to think about things like drinks, how you're going to keep yourself hydrated, if that's important for you with masses of people, how you're going to, what kind of breaks do you need? What are some locations around the convention where you know that, okay, I can always go take a breather there. I have had the privilege to always go to a convention with a friend. Mm-hmm. And that is a nicer experience, even though it's perfectly fine to go alone. There is like plenty of online communities where you can just connect with people who are going to those conventions as well, and then organize some games, link up with those people. You're doing an activity together, which means that it is much easier to spend time together, even with strangers. I guess those are the things that come to my mind first.
Couple more things in order, if you're thinking about going to Ropecon, perhaps, or going to a bigger convention outside of the place where you live, buy your tickets in advance. That's something important because many times they could probably run out. Like some years in the past, particularly Essen has run out of tickets.
Yeah, or maybe there I would say research how they get sold out. Because I think the early bird tickets, Ropecon early bird tickets. I'm a broken record, but this is the first time I'm saying this in the podcast. But I think everyone who talks to me about Ropecon tickets, they will hear the same thing from me. Do not buy the early bird Ropecon tickets. I think the ticket to Ropecon is, what, 45 euros?
I think so, yes.
The early bird is 40 euros.
Yeah.
Do you get your money back if you get sick?
No.
No. And does Ropecon ever get sold out?
I don't think so.
No. So maybe treat that 5 euros as an insurance for when you get sick. Well, you only lost 5 euros instead of 40 euros.
Yes. I think that is true for Ropecon if you're buying, if you're going to a bigger convention or going to a smaller convention, maybe figure out if there's going to be enough availability. That's a very good point. But so figure out or buy your ticket in advance. If you're going outside, make sure that you have a place reserved
outside
in advance.
Where?
Outside of Finland or outside of the place where you live.
Yes.
Essen becomes really expensive closer to the convention day. It's really hard to get a decent spot. You have to then get outside of the city or farther away, which makes it more logistically difficult to move to the convention.
Yeah, for at least for Essen, I can say that you can never start your planning too soon for that trip.
That is true. Mm. One thing that we do in Ropecon, which we don't necessarily, well, we don't necessarily do that much in Essen, but can be done. Register for events. If you are interested in events, in particular in Ropecon, you are registering for the different LARPings or the different RPGs. Sometimes there are lotteries. Sometimes there might be just like simple registration. Check the events in advance that you want to attend. If it's a discussion, a conference or whatever, a tournament, and then register in advance.
Yeah.
This probably is true for many bigger conventions in the United States where I have never been able to participate, but it's probably true for many different events. And definitely in Ropecon is something that you want to investigate a bit in advance.
Yeah, and even in Spielessen, when you have those demos, some demos let you book those time slots in advance. What we have done many times is that on some days during the morning, we go out in the different booths, we book demos for both of us. And that's a nice way to fill your calendar so you don't end up with this time of thinking like, oh, what should we do next? It's nice to have things in your calendar.
That is true. And connected to that, if you are going to Essen or many other events that maybe sell games or have the events, make a plan. Make a bit of a plan of what you want to do, what you want to see. If you know that you're really interested in checking out a game, then make sure that you have a little bit timed and plan so that you also get your hydration times, your breathing time, so that you're not overwhelmed. Because the place, as you said before, it's going to be packed. There's going to be a lot of people in all of these different conventions. Maybe Ropecon is not that big, but still, make a little bit of a plan of what you're trying to do, where you're wanting to go.
Do you want to know what's my personal hack?
Yeah.
Or that's a little bit planning adjacent. And that is decide ahead of time what is the criteria for a successful convention experience for you. Meaning that, for example, for Ropecon, I think successful Ropecon means that I get to 2 organized programs.
Mm.
If I get it done, I can say that that was a successful convention. The reason why it's great or works great for me is that then when the convention is over, and you feel a little bit down that, oh, now it's over.
Yeah.
Did I have a good time? Or if you think to yourself, oh, should I have done more? Should I have tried to do this? Should I have tried to do that? You can always think to yourself that, hey, you know, you did the things. You did the things that you wanted to do. You can call this a successful time. And you had a good time.
So what is your success criteria for Essen?
For Essen, I think for Essen, I don't need to make a success criteria. It's just, you know, you just show up there in the morning and you leave there when the thing closes down and you will find things to do. That's not going to be a problem. I could say, give it like an amount of like, oh, this many demos will be a success for me. But I know that the limitation, it will be my own time and never that I don't know what to do next.
That is true. Last thing that I want to say is what you said already. Plan your food, maybe your water. If you want some snacks, make sure you take some snacks. At one point, I was taking my big coffee mug to Ropecon so that I would know that, okay, I don't have to leave the events. I can just pour myself some coffee. But also, like, if you get headaches or whatever, maybe take a little bit of medicine.
Hey, do you think one should think about bathroom situations? And at Ropecon, I don't think one needs to think about it so much. But Spielessen, at least if you look at the queues around the ladies' bathrooms, mm-hmm. those are massive.
Yeah.
It really feels that Spielessen does not have enough bathrooms for the people that come there. And that might be a thing that you want to consider when making your plan
yeah.
for the day.
Make sure you go to the bathroom before you enter the yeah. hold and go to the bathroom on your lunch break.
Exactly.
And try to hold it in between.
yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that when I was reading a little bit about what other people do in conventions, some people recommend running your event. You have mentioned already that there is many online groups, many online, how did you call it? Like
online communities. Online talking about forums,
yeah,
Discord
online communities
servers.
And forums where people from those communities will probably come to bigger conventions. Hey, if you have nothing else to do, maybe run an event or organize gaming outside of the activity. Last time we were in Essen, you invited a very nice friend of yours from the Board Game Barrage Discord.
Yeah, and who, before we met, I had not even sent any messages to that person. I hadn't, you know, ever had a chat with that person. But I knew that Board Game Barrage Discord is a cool place.
Yeah.
So I had no worries that this is going to be a cool guy. And he was a cool guy. We had a very fun time playing games with him.
All right. So that's the type of things that we would recommend doing, or that I would recommend thinking about when going to a convention. Now, Jonas, we have already mentioned the conventions that we have been to. I have been to the same exact conventions as you. What are the other conventions that you can think of that people would like to go to or that people should go to?
Are we talking globally?
Globally, yes.
Yeah. So I don't know
or where, that you would like to go to at least.
Yeah, yeah. Because I don't know where you, the listener, should go to. The place that I would want to go someday is Dice Tower West. Was that going to be the same response from you?
No.
Okay. Dice Tower West, so that's a convention centered around gaming. You go there to game. That's what you go there to do. You just play, 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 play. There is so many people coming from the Board Game Barrage Discord to Dice Tower West. I see every time they go there, those photos, how they're having fun together, meeting in the meet space.
Yeah.
And I always look at those photos and messages and I think, oh, I wish I were there.
Yeah.
But that would require a very, very long flight.
Yeah.
To Las Vegas.
So Dice Tower West is in Las Vegas.
Yes.
And Dice Tower East is in
I don't know. Who
Florida?
Cares about Dice
that,
Tower
you
East?
Care.
It's about Dice Tower West. That's
what about the Dice Tower Cruise?
Yeah, again, now Dice Tower West. I want to go there, Luis.
Mostly Board Game Barrage. Mostly because of Board Game Barrage.
I think it's also might be the biggest Dice Tower event in general.
Okay.
And this is one of those things that no shame to Dice Tower, but I rarely disagree with kind of the games they really like. And I feel that the Dice Tower audience leans into something different than I usually lean into. But Dice Tower West seems like it's a convention for everyone. You will find your gaming soulmates there.
Yeah. The one that I would definitely want to go is UK Games Expo. I think that's the other big one in Europe where I would likely be able to go. So that's one. And then
Why do you want to go there?
I don't know. It's just like another time to be able to go to play games and be nerdy with other people that like the games.
Yeah.
Know? It's just like, it just happened. Uh-huh. I think that's what gave me the idea for this episode. Mm. I think it just happened last weekend. So I'm like, yeah, I could have gone there. Like I could have gone at the end of May to a board game expo and not have to travel all the way to Dice Tower West.
Mm-hmm.
That is like in Birmingham. So Play Brass Birmingham.
Yeah, in Birmingham.
In the UK Games Expo.
Take a photo.
Exactly.
Put it on your Instagram. Say, I'm playing Brass Birmingham in Birmingham.
Yeah. 21, almost 22,000 attendees about.
Yeah.
And then the other one, because I've been reading about the history of Dungeons and Dragons, is Gen Con, mm-hmm. which it does not happen in Lake Geneva,
yeah.
But it used, I think it's called Gen Con because it happened in Lake Geneva back in the day.
You were talking about Lake Geneva, USA.
Lake Geneva, USA.
Because
yeah.
There is a Lake Geneva in Europe as well.
Yes, yes, not that one. But yeah, Gen Con is kind of the second biggest conference in the world. And that's the big one in the United States that I feel like I would be interested to see. Now it's in Indianapolis, Indiana. And that I think I like because of the same thing that you said about Dice Tower West. That is like a very gaming focused event. Plus, there is also all of the expositors and all of the selling and all of the games. So yeah. I think that would be interesting also.
Yeah, I don't think you can even pay me money to go to Gen Con. It just seems a really horrible experience in terms of the space and how many people are there. And you don't get that many exhibitioners. Is that the term?
Exhibitors.
Yeah. Exhibitors showing their games. There's some, but not the really big ones. Everyone's waiting already about the Spielessen. And it seems so horrible with the amount of people that are there. No, you have to pay me money to go there.
No, you don't have to pay me money. I think it's one of those things that I would like to do once and then probably never would like to do it again for those same reasons that you're saying, but I would like to try it. I would like to experience a Gen Con experience.
Yeah, and maybe it's good. Maybe it's good.
Yeah, and then other...
Or let me say, maybe it's not that bad.
Maybe it's not that bad.
I'm sure that there's good stuff happening, but maybe it's not that bad that I think it is.
Few other conventions that I think are worth mentioning, just for the listener. Dice Tower East, that we have said, the Dice Tower Cruise. BGG Con.
Where is BGG Con?
BGG Con is in Dallas, Texas.
What happens at BGG Con?
I think it's just a small version of, or maybe not even that small. I don't know how many people. I couldn't find information of the attendees, or I didn't research all of these conventions. I imagine that it's something a bit smaller than Dice Tower West or Dice Tower East. I think it's in a similar vein. But I think there's also the BGG Cruise. That's something I've seen advertised so many times in the Board Game Geek website. I think that happens in November, though.
Yeah.
I would be interesting to explore that opportunity. I would not like to pay for a cruise just to get inside and play board games. So that I think hey, that sounds interesting to try.
Hey, I just remembered a convention that I might want to go even more than to Dice Tower West or maybe after Dice Tower West. But I want to hear your list to the end to see if this convention is on that list.
The other convention, Origins Game Expo. I think that's something that I have heard also a lot from American channels where people go. PAX Unplugged. I think those are PAX Unplugged, Origins, and Gen Con are the biggest conventions in the United States. The biggest organized conventions in the United States.
Yeah. One more. Yeah. Okay. Two more conventions.
Okay.
That I think are interesting to me. The one that's less interesting and the one that I just remembered just now is SplotterCon.
Okay.
Yeah. People are doing SplotterCons. That would be really cool to go to play all the Splotter games that are out of print, not available, hard to find the people to play them with. Hey, now there's a convention where people have those games and they want to play those games. Now, the one that I would be really interested in going to is the Gathering of Friends. Have you heard about the Gathering of Friends?
The Gathering of Friends.
Yeah. So it might not even be something that you can call a convention. I see by Googling that people refer to it as a gaming fest organized by one Alan R. Moon, designer of Ticket to Ride. And it's an invite-only gaming event. I think it lasts 10 days or so somewhere in the States. Gamers and lots of designers playing together. That would be one of those places where it would be really cool to go to just to see what it's like to play a game with Frida and Friese.
Yeah.
Yeah. Playing Ticket to Ride with Frida and Friese, that would be fun.
Okay, so I'm not sure this qualifies for board game convention, but I found at least one extra from this research that I did, one extra event that I think you might be interested more than me. Have you ever heard of Immersion?
No.
Immersion is a LARP festival happening from the 31st of July till the 2nd of August in Turku, Finland.
Oh, hey, I have actually. Mercedes talked about this when we were playing last time.
So yeah. This is not a board game convention. It's a live action role-playing convention, but that's something that we have started to do more in our Ropecon events. So definitely something that I don't feel like doing because it's so close to Ropecon that I'm like, okay, maybe it's a bit too much. But if it happened a little bit earlier in the year, a little bit later in the year, I would definitely be interested. But I find it and maybe it's something that you would be interested in trying.
Nice. And I think that honestly, time calendars and stuff, that's becoming a bit of a bottleneck for me. In April, there was a Baltic Wargaming convention here in Helsinki, in Suomenlinna, out of all the places.
Oh.
And those people who do not know what Suomenlinna is, it is a old Sea Fortress, located just outside of Helsinki, used to be Europe's biggest operational sea fortress back in the day.
Yeah.
So it's a really cool place. And they imagined it. They had a historic wargaming convention there.
Yeah.
Would have been so cool to go. But I had so many other things happening at the same time, so I couldn't go there.
Well, next year maybe, or this is never going to happen in Suomelina.
It probably might happen back in Finland, but I guess as a Baltic festival, it might go to some other countries. But hey, guess what? I don't mind going to Lithuania, Latvia, or Estonia, having like a fun trip there at the same time.
All right. So those are our thoughts, recommendations, a little bit of experience with board game conventions. Is there anything else you would like to say to our listeners that are thinking about visiting a board game convention?
No.
All right. Then there you have it. We have shared the knowledge. Now it's up to you to find a convention and visit it. We will be in Ropecon at the end of July, from the 24th to the 26th of July. So you can visit us there. Hopefully we'll get to organize something. I still haven't heard from the organizers. Have you heard from the organizers?
Not yet. What did you apply for?
For a one-shot of Spire.
Oh, I'm doing a one-shot of 10 Candles.
Yeah, that's what I
thought. Or hoping to do. Me too.
Mm-hmm. We will be there, so we hope to see you there. If not playing with us, at least playing with other people. That is it for this week's episode. We want to thank you for your time. Our next episode is airing in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Kuulemisiin. Cool,